This is just an intro. It's just an intro. The guest is coming on soon. So quit bitching. We're going to start the show right after this intro. You're listening to Inside You with Michael Rosenbaum. If you're looking at me in a wide shot, you're going to see tons of papers around. There's a lot of stuff going on. I hope you're having a good week. I know it's just been one day in the week. Yesterday, it was Monday. But, in terms of anxiety and stuff, I find that if I don't stick to that routine, man, flipping out, I notice. I get a little short-tempered. I'm not patient. So all I say is, hey, you know, I didn't work out 3 days in a row. Just things stack up. I got to stop and say, no, go work out. Release some steam. Do it. I'm just saying. News every day, man. I know you guys are going like, what is going on here, man? But I get frustrated because every day it's something different. I almost want them to give us the news just on Fridays. Give us news. Because every day, okay, a mask. Don't wear a mask. Wear a mask. Okay, now the antibodies, if you get the test, that will help. And now we don't know. They're not sure. Don't get the test. So it's almost like every day it's changing and like, you know. I think that's where the most anxiety comes from, is everybody's just like, what are we doing? We're sort of in limbo. Fucking limbo. Rush limbo. Oof. Sorry. Here we are, another episode. I'm glad you're sticking around and listening to the episode. And by the way, the podcast definitely, I think everybody who has a podcast is taking a little chunk because I think people aren't commuting as much to work and doing whatever. And so, you know, you're noticing, oh, wait a minute, I didn't have as many as listeners. And in fact, last week's episode, Bob Odenkirk, holy shit, man, that was just sensational. And I hope people come around to listening to it. I know everyone's got their lives and they're busy and, you know, and I respect it. And I appreciate you guys for tuning in every week. And a big shout out to my patrons. I tell them all the time, but there's a wave to you, patrons. You guys are, I don't know, you're just really special and you really help the show more than you could possibly imagine. So I love when I refresh and you see a patron, I do like a refresh in the morning and a refresh at night. And when you see new patrons, you're like, oh my gosh. And if you don't know what Patreon is, it's just, if you go to patreon.com, people support the podcast in other ways. You know, there's tiers and people pledge and they get free stuff and it's cool. So anyway. Also a reminder of the online store. It's still open, online store for Inside You stuff. And what else? There's also my band stuff, Left on Laurel. As of now, July 2nd, we're still planning on doing the live podcast Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum live in Austin at the North Door with Zach Levi from Shazam. But just stick around and we'll find out. We're kind of every day again, we're waiting to see what happens. I've been trying to FaceTime my grandma as much as possible. She's alone. I can't imagine what it's like for her. 91 years old. She's such a good woman. I love her so much. We were trying to do a house party thing where you house party everybody. It's like another Zoom thing. She couldn't get it going. She was muting herself. She was like, kept turning herself around, you know, with the little switch. It was just, I was like, holy shit, man. And my uncle can't go over there to help her, really. I just want to, you know. Beverly D'Angelo is my guest this week. She is, and by the way, before I say that, make sure, if you will, I know you guys are listening, subscribe, write a review. Got to say it. Podcast, the handle's at Inside Podcast on, I think, Instagram and Facebook and at Instapod, Inside of You Pod. Fucking, sorry, Twitter. I've been doing a lot of Instagram lives. I hope you're enjoying that. Look for me again. And Patreons, I'll probably do another private YouTube live with you, live. But Beverly D'Angelo, she's been on the show before. She's such an eccentric lady. And so she's just full of life and so much experience. She has a story about everything. And she's one of those fiery ladies that could just hug you and then smack you if she needs to do it. She's tough, she's lovely, and brilliant, and it's an honor to have her on the podcast again. I know she's listening. Wasn't an easy edit. Ryan really had to work on this, Bev. I love Beverly D'Angelo, and you will too, again, but this is a lot of fun. Let's get inside Beverly D'Angelo.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
I took you out to dinner a couple weeks ago.
Yes, you did.
And you said, nobody asks me to go to dinner.
Nobody does.
Now, what does that
mean? Well, that's a lie. I just went back there with Rufus.
Rufus Wainwright?
Yeah, my dear, dear,
he's
dear.
He's a very talented guy. You love
genius.
Him?
I love him.
What's so great about him besides his music and his brilliance?
As a person, that kind of, because he is as open as a person and as responsive as a person as the songs that he sings to represent that. He's the real deal.
How many times have you seen him in concert?
Five.
Do you cry at his concert when he's singing?
No.
Hey, Ryan, could you grab me a bottle of that water? You have a water right there.
But what about the Diet Coke?
Oh, yeah, I don't have any Coke at all. I'm trying to get away from that.
I'm trying to. I don't even eat artificial sweeteners anymore. It's the key to my everlasting beauty.
It's yeah.
It's uncanny.
Well, you've been. You know,
it's uncanny how good I look.
It's uncanny, but it is. You do look great. You've been working on yourself, though. It's not like you can just do that and not work.
Yeah. No. I'm into it, but also, you know, I experienced this incredible freedom because here. Two keys. One is I spent 18 years getting up every morning at 6:30, basically, and either picking up my kids in school or making arrangements for it and kind of fitting a life in between the time, like if they were staying with their dad or something like that. And my life was really being of service.
So you were a mom pretty free. I mean, you worked, but for 18 years, you mostly worked
priority.
As a mom.
Yeah. So that cuts out on a lot of stress. Even though it's a different kind of stress. When you're stressed from being of service to someone, when your priority is love, you know,
yeah,
it doesn't age you as much.
But that's purpose,
purpose,
too.
purpose. But what happened is so now they're launched.
And what?
And it's launched, and it's a good launch. They're stable. They're good kids.
Were you worried that they weren't going to be stable? You know, movie star kids.
Yeah, well, I didn't educate them in Hollywood. I didn't infiltrate them with Hollywood.
Did they go to private schools, though?
They went to private schools, yes, but out of town, Northridge, down in the Miracle Mile.
But people knew who they were.
You know, from a very young age, I explained to them that there were people whose goal in life was to let them know how well they knew their dad. And that it was really important to understand the difference between people being attracted to fame and getting to know you. And I'm a great bullshit detector, and I guided them in that. And they're good at it.
Well, it's tough enough having, you know, like I had parents who weren't famous, you know, and there was still a lot of dysfunction. So, you know, how could there not be dysfunction? You know, it's Beverly D'Angelo, heartthrob, actress, and Al Pacino. How does that not like?
Well, I cut all that stuff out when I became a mom, though. I didn't live in my life as a famous person.
How do you do that?
I didn't work a lot.
On purpose?
Yeah. It was always how long and how close am I going to be here?
Do you love work?
I love inspiration. I love feeling inspired. I seek it. I am an advocate of doing whatever it takes to find your inspiration point. I know what mine is. You know, mine is yearning. Mine is being in the yearning. You know, that's when the stuff comes out of me, the writing, the desire. It was when I have a desire to express, you know, and Hollywood never afforded me a lot of those opportunities, you know.
And why is that? Do you think you're lucky? It's kind of the roll of the dice. It's like, you know, what are they going
to
give me?
I think a lot of it had to do with the vacation. Because when I did Coal Miner's Daughter, it was really an acting.
You nominated for a Golden Globe,
right? It was really an acting thing.
Patsy Cline.
Black hair, voice, singing, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then I did Vacation, and it really, the way that I look, I don't look Italian. I don't look dark. I look pretty much like the girl next door, kind of, or I think I was that MILF. They invented that word.
Right.
You know, and I think
you are a MILF.
Well, I'm like a grand MILF or whatever it is now. But But anyway, and also, you know, that was like mid 80s. That was like, you know, the beginning of this concept of, you know, franchises and stuff like that. And so I think that that person that rests so easily in the public's mind, you know, the public people turned into the people who ran the studios. They were all students and law students and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I think that had something to do with it. I do know, I can always tell when somebody's a vacation fan. I can always tell by the way they react to things I say. If they're surprised or askance or whatever, I can just tell how they react.
Did you fight it for a long time? Were you like, hey, this is great, I have a lot of success?
No, that's where the lack of ambition comes in. That's where I moved to Italy in 81, then I moved to Ireland in 84. I basically lived outside of Hollywood.
To get away from that?
It wasn't to get away from it, but I certainly, you said, did I fight it? And I'm saying, not only did I not, no, the answer is no, I did not fight it. I moved.
You moved.
I left.
But you still were getting roles, though.
Well,
still...
I was, yeah, I was great agents and all that kind of stuff.
Because you were kind of a triple threat, right?
I suppose so, but I didn't pursue it, Michael. Not ardently.
I'm going to go back to that dinner we had 2 weeks ago. I'm going to pump it up, Pache, because Che runs the joint, and I love going there.
I know, they're so great.
And maybe we'll get a...
And actually, where we sat was good, because I was worried about the acoustics there, and sitting outside was perfect. I went back with Rufus and his husband, Yorn DePache, and we sat in the same place.
So you said, no one ever asks me to dinner.
Well, no, I don't get asked on a lot of dates.
Like on dates.
I don't get
asked. Ours wasn't a date. I've known you forever.
I don't get asked on a lot of dates, but I'm not a dater.
But how does someone not want to take Beverly D'Angelo on a date? You don't put yourself out there enough.
Just that phrase disgusts me.
What? Put yourself out there?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what am I supposed to say? You don't try hard enough, Beth.
Why should I try?
But how are men supposed to know you're available? How are they supposed to see you?
On this podcast.
Guys, listen.
I know I'm not an Instagrammer.
But you're,
no,
you're
but I'm not looking.
But you're a hopeless romantic. You want to be in.
No. I. Someone has to find me. That's what I
know
think
your
at this point. Well, I know, but have we ever tried anything like that? No. Someone has to find me.
Well, you've had moments. You've had like, but yes, you told me about some. You call them dry spells where you're like, you know what? I'm busy. I'm doing my thing.
Oh, my vow of celibacy, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a while. That was like 4 months.
Oh, excuse me?
It was a while.
It was a while.
But then does a woman, I'm sure women think this because guys always think it. Does a woman ever think, and you're not like this. I know just from knowing you, you're not like this. You're not.
I'm very atypical.
But don't you feel like, I just want to kind of get effed. I just want to
F. Yeah, we say break me off.
Break me
just
off.
Just break me off, baby.
I've never heard that.
It's more of a different racial.
Break me off.
Break me off.
So you do think those things?
Of course I do.
So do you ever have your friends try to hook you up? Like, find me someone that's cool, someone I can hang out with, someone I can listen to records to, someone I can just be myself. I can just start singing around the house like an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
And does it happen every once in a while? They say, meet this guy, Richard. He's fantastic.
I've had some.
Richards.
I've had some fix-ups.
Setups never work, do they?
No.
Did you ever notice that? They never work. And it's always when a woman says, you have to meet my friend Lonnie.
Run.
Because they're never as pretty as the friend who sets them up with me.
Well, I don't think it's about being pretty for me.
You don't want pretty?
No, I find that rather intimidating.
Well, I'm not saying pretty. I'm saying how about being attracted to them?
Oh, I need to be attracted. But I'm saying that my triggers for attraction don't necessarily lie with the physical thing.
What's the attraction? Intellect?
Humor.
Humor. Is that number one? If someone's
smart's number one.
Smart's number one.
Smart,
humor, witty's
smart
next to
and
it.
Fast.
But you've gone out with, you've had sex with people that aren't that smart or that witty or that funny.
That's not true.
Have you ever gone out with someone who just wasn't funny?
No.
Really? Yeah. I can name one person.
Who?
I won't say it.
Say it. Initials.
It
rhymes with.
It rhymes with.
Who's not funny?
Todd Pisher.
Oh, that was Carrie. That was Carrie's idea. That wasn't even my idea.
That's what I'm saying. People hook you up, and yeah, whatever. It didn't work out. Well, Carrie Fisher really hooked you up with this person. And
we just wanted to be sisters in real life.
Well, you were sisters.
I know, but like we were, you know.
But she hooked you up with this person, and that person was funny?
He was funny.
He was funny.
Don was fine.
See, you said his name.
It's okay. He doesn't care. He put me in his book.
He did?
Yeah.
What did he say about you?
He said that all this stuff, and he said things like, you know, as my sister said, how could I be born again Christian if I was dating Beverly D'Angelo? But
that's kind of a stab.
Well, to God, it's, yeah. But anyway, not looking for them. But anyway, no, but he said that the wonderful thing was that I made him aware of what he really wanted. I think I am a transitional, but even then he got married.
So that's what I don't want. Now he's saying you're the woman who, that's what I don't want.
I'm a good transitional.
But
I
am too.
Men look at me for transitions. Like I've held the hands of dying people. I've transitioned a person into parenthood. I've transitioned people into so many men that I've been with have found their perfect person after me.
But if you think about it, everybody's like that. So if they find one person, everything before then was searching for the right one.
Yeah, but why am I always the person that's right before the right one?
Well, I'm always the guy why am I the guy who they're always like, so-and-so, we got to fire that guy. You know what? We only have 2 days. Let's hire Rosenbaum. He's good. He'll be in
well,
there. He'll be
no,
do all right.
I'm always on this track of like, if nothing else, it's a profound friendship because the men that I like are people that I want to know.
Right.
They're people that I like. I actually like them.
Who's the last person you liked? That you said, I like this guy. I'm enjoying him. I'm sleeping with him. This is fun. He's funny. He's
someone I didn't sleep with.
Someone. Do I know this person?
No.
I don't.
No.
Do I know of this person?
No.
Was it years ago?
Yeah.
And so you never slept with him, but you had sort of a emotional thing.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of talked.
Yeah.
That was it. But never had sex?
Not really.
Okay. So, look, I know.
We're dancing around.
I find it tough because I think you're so talented and so pretty, inside out, and so smart.
You know what a friend of mine.
Wait a minute.
I got to tell you something. I'm all about the yearning. In fact, I sought someone out because I knew he would inspire me to do something that I really needed to be doing. Anyway, I got like basically a book out of this guy and songs and stuff.
You're writing a book
and
your songs.
A book of erotica. But anyway, and I you know, because I can't tell anybody about it. I'm too embarrassed. But I did say to this one guy friend of mine in New York, a younger man, the 36-year-old, I told you about him. But anyway, I said, you know, I have this fantasy that I'll. Is that you or me?
I think it was probably you.
I have this fantasy that I'll... Uh-oh, did I not bring my phone? After looking
You have for, your phone in there.
I don't. And I was late getting here because I needed to find my phone. Anyway.
But you whipped out a giant iPad.
But I said to my friend, I said, I have this fantasy that I'll send him like the first section of my book and he'll fall in love with me. And he said, a man will never do that. He said, a man will never go, I'm not really into her, but wow, that book she's writing, fuck it, now I'm there. He said, men don't do that. They don't do that. They don't care if you're a talented or creative or madly ingenious.
Unless
what?
You trying to turn that off?
I got to find my phone. I just want to see if
All
it's
right, hang
here.
On, let's take it. I hear
Wait,
it.
I hear
it. It is in your purse.
Where is it? Where the fuck is
Below
it?
Below you?
This is bizarre. Oh!
Oh my God, you jackass.
Okay.
All right, turn it off.
I'm trying to.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Okay, it's off. Anyway, yeah, and he said it doesn't matter. And you know, it's true. And I mean, my life has always been about the creative. I'm not kidding. And I know it doesn't look like that in a career or anything.
What?
And all the things I've walked away, well, recording career, everything I've walked away from, but it's the truth. I always have a go-to. It's like my neural pathway is if you feel something and it doesn't get an immediate response from somebody, then you got to write it out. You got to sing it out. You got to dance it out. You got to work it out. I mean, yeah. I'm a big subliminal person. And so that doesn't allow me to interact in a way like traditional women interact with men.
But when you say the thing about the book, men aren't going to like it, care about it. Well, girl,
they don't care. It's not going to make them love you.
How about a man that isn't in this industry?
Who would get that?
There's men who just like want to date, like their woman's brilliance is an attraction. And on top of it,
maybe initially, sure.
How about all the girls? How about how many women you see with these guys and they're like, what the fuck? And they're like, well, he's brilliant. He's, he wrote something. He does. He's not an actor. I don't know if I agree with you. I think they're intimidated by it. That's what happens.
They're all intimidated.
When a woman does too much.
I've met a man who wasn't intimidated.
I've been intimidated by women.
Would you be intimidated by a woman if you went over to her house and she just started kissing you in mid-sentence and like came on your leg? Would you find that
came on my leg?
Would you find that intimidating, a bit overwhelming?
No, I don't think so. If I
really
liked her, why would I fight? Wait, you're saying if I went over a woman's house and
if she's aggressive like that?
Well, it depends. I can understand why an aggressive woman. It depends what we're talking about here. Because if it's the first time we're kind of hooking up and she gets a little aggressive.
Yeah, it's intimidating.
It might be a little bit like, whoa, wow,
that's a little bit.
Here's what I suggest. I'm single, so my suggestions can
mean
just
nothing,
fuck them off.
Like mine.
Fuck them right
we
off.
We should just sit here and do a not self-help column.
Yeah, to me, I think I got to
eat. It's like the blind leading the blind.
It is, but fuck it.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, you know, you kind of want to ease into it.
Lurking.
I dated a woman.
Yeah.
And at first it was sexy and subtle and all these things. And then, whoa, look out, tiger. It was like, whoa. And then
it was sexy
then,
and subtle?
Well, I was comfortable.
Walk me through the sexy and subtle part.
Well, you
the
know,
texts.
You hang out, you kiss, you flirt. It's easing your way into it. Date two,
nobody's
whatever.
Fucking,
you know,
you're just kind of grooving and getting excited.
It's a groove, man. Oh, I love this song. You're driving to dinner. You're playing.
Yeah, let me text you the song.
Yeah, do that. Oh, great. Nice. It was great. You want to come in?
Yeah.
You know what? I can come in for 10 minutes, but I'm serious. It's going to be 10 minutes. What? All I'm saying is.
Yeah. And then what?
And then I think for me.
Yeah.
It all depends. But if I'm with a woman and we ease into it and it's nice and sexy and everything's going right, then I in a way it gives me confidence and like I'm comfortable in this.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes when I'm attacked, I've had attacked where, oh my God, I think he just bit through my lip.
Yeah.
Or it's like crazy. And I'm like, whoa, is that all she's into? Fuck. Maybe in my mind, that's what she's into. And I'm not a fucking porn
that's
star.
It. Yeah.
Maybe I can't fuck. Like she probably thinks I might be able to fuck. That's never going to happen.
Exactly.
When all I should worry about, just worry about the first fuck.
Yeah.
Do you remember I was talking about that?
What was the first?
Do you remember? You were worried with some guy you were dating a long time ago.
Yeah.
You were worried that, I don't know, I don't love my body like I should. And if he sees me naked, what if he doesn't come back for a second time?
First
and
fuck,
I go,
yeah.
Let's get past the first fuck.
Yeah.
Not the second fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wrote it down because I thought it was so funny.
The first
because
fuck.
You were worried about the second fuck when you haven't even fucked the guy.
Well, yes. That's the one to worry about. First fuck's easy.
No, the first...
In fact, I really think, in fact, this was used on me by one of the absolute great loves of my life.
Al?
I'm not going to tell you the story
right,
if you're going to try to turn it into a personality thing.
All right.
No, let me just say this, that in my lifetime, I did experience someone saying, A, we're not going to do this until we cannot help it.
Ooh.
Which is so hot.
Okay. So you just answered your own question.
And B. Okay, but you have to promise me that we'll do this again right after. And I mean, those are the two hottest lines you can say to anybody.
Wait, okay, here's what intimidates me about that.
What?
Line one was great.
Yeah.
The first line was great.
Yeah.
But at 47 years old, if someone says, hey, we're going to do this again right now, I'm like,
not
oh,
right
fuck.
Now.
Oh, good, good, good. Because, you know.
No, it's the guy has to say it.
Yeah, the guy says it. He's like, well, he must be really into you if he wants to go a second time. Right?
Yeah. Well, because what you're going to explain
I
is
mean,
that
night.
You just, how old are you?
47. It just depends. Sometimes.
Can you do it twice a night?
I can. Here's the thing. If I'm really into someone, I can. But if also I'm really into someone, I can't.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean I don't like the it's just the pheromones. It's whatever it is, the chemistry that I could just keep going after that.
Yeah.
But that one, it's not. I'm not comparing. Yeah. What
Isn't
is that?
It interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is like
I
sex mean, therapy. For
yeah.
Us.
I mean, this is what I'm into these days.
What is it?
What I'm into these days is actually, and it's been for a while now, I'd say like for about at least a year.
Right.
I've been very fascinated by the entanglement of sexual feelings and the emotional field. And this is because I came of age sexually in the era of free love. I was out here at 17 and boom.
You're fucking everything?
Everything because I had a boyfriend too, but because it was free love. And so I didn't go through that, oh, I'm a bad girl. Oh, I'm going to be coy or I'm going to learn how to seduce. It was just like-
You're just free.
Free as a bird. And I really remained free until just before I became a mom, really. I mean, it was just my mindset. But in most ways, although I feel deeply passionately, you know, I kind of go from like fixation to fixation to fixation to fixation. But anyway, my sexuality was totally enmeshed with my emotional life. It was like if your deepest emotional truths are here and your sexuality is here, the more you keep hitting that and getting into it, you know, it's going to get down in there and then it's going to get all entangled with your emotions. And I'm very interested, not in the disentanglement, but the awareness of it. I had this podcast and typical me, another podcast, another thing I've never brought to fruition, but I interviewed a bunch of people, including this woman who was the hereditary heir of tantric knowledge, which is sexual.
Right.
And I found her fascinating. I found the way that she became that person fascinating. But also the whole idea of tantric sex and that actually, you know, part of that is the belief that sex is a path of enlightenment. That if you do it right, you're like, you know, you get like a thing. And I'm fascinated by that. What? Okay.
Right there.
Okay. But yeah, I mean, but at the same time, if you don't think that it's intimidating attacking someone, imagine how far this rap goes.
Talk to me about tantric for a second, because Ryan, you probably don't know anything about it.
No.
That's why I'm asking, and I don't.
Well,
so
okay.
Okay,
I can't give you the whole lecture, but
give me
Let me give you some tips.
Tips.
Okay, no, let me give you some tips.
You don't moan and stuff like that.
Let me give you
Fine.
Some tips.
Give me some tips. Here's just the tips.
Just practical. You know, what you're going to do is, you know how like men and women alike, we kind of have this goal-oriented mentality of like, you start the here and then you go race to the finish line. So it's like all about building, building, building. It has a lot to do with watching porn. Don't watch porn. Stop watching porn.
I rarely
porn.
Do.
But, you know, it's like we have this mentality as you start here and then you kind of ease in and then you start pumping harder and harder and harder. And then boom, you come.
Right. Right?
Nope.
Okay.
No.
So tell me how to fuck, Bev. Please tell me how to have sex with a woman.
Here's what you're going to do.
No, by the way,
there are
a lot of people
are
laughing, but everyone right now who's listening is really listening
to
this.
Well, you know, here's
because
the thing.
They want to know some things. Why not improve your sex life? Why not improve the way things? Because, men, we rush it. We're like, oh, my God, this is it. You know.
See, I'm guilty of that. I can speed right. I can come right now. I mean, not literally, but you know what I mean?
On this podcast.
You know.
If you wanted to, probably
No, I won't. But here's what I wanted to say. Okay, tips for a good sex life. Okay. You must understand that men, and I'm just speaking to heteros out there.
Okay.
Okay. I could, you know, I have that bi thing, but I'm just speaking to heteros. Cause,
you have that bi thing.
Because you're a man. So let's just
confined. You were bi. Okay.
So let's just keep it to the men, women thing.
Okay.
Okay. You must acknowledge that men and women not only are different, but we think differently. And it's even been proven scientifically the synapses are different between the, you know, in the
cerebral cortex. You don't have to convince me. I know that we think differently.
Yeah. Well, number one, embrace that. Number one, embrace that. Number one, embrace the fact that when you speak to a woman, you're speaking to someone whose very brain is organized to listen and to perceive what you want. And to pick up verbal cues and emotional cues, and women are highly able to tune into emotional needs. So when you've got a man who can speak emotionally and reveal emotional needs, then you've got a woman's attention.
How do you do that? Give me an example. Like if I'm, let's say, we're together. I'm saying things to you like.
Well, do you want me to tell you how to get laid?
No,
or how to...
no. I'm not saying that. I'm saying
because I can tell you things to say to get laid.
Like right now, my mind went to, I'm with a woman. Let's imagine what she's thinking and what she wants.
Well, number one, you listen. You know, so for example, if you're going out, you know, I mean, I can get hyper detailed.
I'm just saying that
you go out to dinner,
right? You listen.
What does she order? Does she order soup? Does she order something crunchy? Soft means that.
Be easy with me.
Soft means that she's got some sadness in there. Crunchy means anger.
So if she goes for the calamari, depending
on
how it's
chewy.
Cooked.
Which is chewy. That's kind of midway. Well, that's adventurous. I'd say calamari is adventurous.
Right.
I'm up for.
Okay, so you can read a woman more or read a guy by what they're ordering.
No. I'm just saying it's for a man to, if a man cares about a woman, he should really try to listen to her and respond honestly. And then you might not even want to fuck her. You know what I mean? But if you've got a woman who's like, if you listen to her, it'll cancel out just that lust that you have for her if you really listen. So once you're in the ballpark and you've heard what a woman, you've listened to her and you like her, then I think what you want to do is respond in some way. Let her know that you're listening to her. Because the reason I'm bringing this up is because, well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that's the foreplay. That's where foreplay starts.
Foreplay is really listening.
Foreplay for a woman starts with conversation.
Well, yeah.
Foreplay for a man starts with what she's wearing, right? You know, like you kind of start your foreplay thing in your mind.
You are right. You are right. And by the way, if it's just about in general, what you're saying is, you know, spend some time just talking and listening and getting, that's a big part of it. Instead of just going
it's
a time
saver.
Even if you're already having sex with this person.
It's a time saver.
It's just.
Well, we haven't gotten to how you have sex.
Well, I'm okay.
Because if that, what I'm saying is, boys, remember that foreplay starts in conversation, listening, And also it'll save you a bunch of time, because if you really listen to someone, you might go, you know what? I don't care how much I want to fuck her. This is the trail of tears here.
And the same thing for a guy. How many times have you, I want to fuck this guy. And then they start talking and talking. You're like, no.
Yeah.
That's happened?
Oh, yeah.
Has it happened with any big movie stars?
Michael, shut up.
Sorry. I went there.
Okay.
I'm just curious, like the biggest, hunkiest, coolest, sexiest, most talented fuckers. And you're like, they're still talking to you.
They talk you out of it. Talked me out of it.
And then they try and you're like, no.
I try to avoid even saying the word no in my life. I try to avoid it.
Well, what do you say?
I change the subject.
What do you do?
Distract. But let's get down to it. So okay. Now you've listened and you've gone, you know what? I'm aligning here. I'm aligning here with this person that I'm listening to. So anyway, just cutting to the chase, and getting to the tantric part, you know what tantric sex is about is that you sit and you don't do anything. You just look at each other.
Whoa.
Just sit there
How
and
long?
Face each other. You know, put your hand on her heart or her body or something, and you just don't do anything.
Okay, you don't want to do this in the first time you have sex with someone, right?
Well,
excuse me for a second. Let me just...
But that's why I'm saying that this thing about the first fuck, you do have to get it out of the way. Because that's something...
That's your whole point to this.
Get it out of the way.
That's why I was a little aggressive, you're saying.
Yeah.
Because they can get it off.
Get it out of the way.
And then we can get into what
then
I
we
need.
Can,
so you're also thinking...
I'm kind of like a guy.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You
that's my
think
problem.
You know what he wants. You think the guy goes, I'm going to be aggressive with him. I'm going to give him what he wants. I'm going to fuck him.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you...
It's not.
I don't know a lot of guys. I don't know... But maybe I just don't think that maybe there's a happy medium. Maybe you're not going to have sex with me. If you want to be aggressive, you say, I'm not going to have sex.
Then that would mean that a guy would have to say, Bev, I don't need that from you. Bev, I don't need.
Have you heard guys say that? I don't need that from you.
They don't need sex with me.
Have they said that to you?
I think I've heard everything.
Have guys turned down sex from you?
Yeah.
Like you said, I'm willing. And they're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Really? I find that hard to believe.
It's happened.
Well, maybe were you aggressive with them?
Yes.
So maybe that whole thing is there's good reasoning on your side.
Yeah, but what they didn't do was go, whoa, I'm going to be in charge here.
So if they would have said, maybe they weren't man enough to do that.
That's right.
They could have just said,
flushed them out.
Wait, watch. They could have been, hey, Bev, whoa, stop it. Stop for a second. Listen to me.
Stop it. Yeah.
You're fucking hot. I want to jump your bones. We got to take it slow. This is kind of like, I don't know. It's just not whatever. You'd be cool with that as long as he said, hey, take it slow.
Well, I think for, I think for me, I think for me, it has to be a fearless man who loves to, who would love to try to be in charge of this.
So how about this? Let me pretend I'm another. Let me pretend I'm another guy.
You know what I mean?
You're doing a whole show.
Yeah, I'm doing a whole show.
Hey, you don't need to do that shit.
Yeah, now you're talking, baby.
That's the guy. Hang on.
This
is the guy. I channeled him. Hey, yeah. Bev, you don't need to do that shit. Okay?
And then I'd start crying. Yeah. Get over here.
So it's still sexy. He's like, come here. Just calm down. Just
calm down.
And then you're like, whoa.
And then I'm like, I'm calm.
Don Henley.
No. Why does everybody talk about Don Henley?
Do they? Well, you had sex with Don Henley.
I didn't have sex with Don
40 years ago.
I didn't have sex with Don. I'm not. You know, if you really think.
I thought you said it on my last podcast. That's why I said it. Did you not?
No.
Okay, Carrie did.
Carrie did.
She dated him for a while.
That's how we became best friends.
That's right.
Yeah.
I know that whole story. And if you haven't heard it, you can listen to the other podcast.
And you know what? Don't. You know, I'm done with that. I got to keep my thing straight now.
Listen, you know, you are self-deprecating. I think that's...
How am I self-deprecating?
Well...
I hate that about myself.
Well, you know...
Get it. Editor got it.
I got it. I lost my thought. That's
you said I was self-deprecating.
No, I think we all are, and I think that's a defense mechanism. It's like you do have all these great things, but I think you always are like, oh, I'm not acting enough. I'm not doing this enough. I'm in a relationship. I think we all do that where we're just like so hard on ourselves And
I think I need to meet a musician.
A musician.
A good musician.
How old? You said you went out with a 36-year-old.
Kinda, once. Yeah.
Okay, was that fun?
Yeah.
Would you date another 36-year-old? Or do you want to have a real serious relationship? Someone you can grow old with.
Honestly, I even thought that probably the best person for me would either be someone who's married, so I don't have to deal with any of that, or even unable in some way.
Disabled? Unable.
Unable
what? Unable to do what?
Unable to be
in a relationship.
Devoured by me. Because when I'm in the yearning, when I'm in the desire, that's when all my stuff comes out and I become brilliant. And I have to finish my show. I have to get that thing performed. You know, I've been working on that for a long time.
Do you think, how passionate, by the way, are you about your career now? Because, I mean, you just finished Insatiable,
right? I'm totally passionate about it, yeah.
Like that's
I'm doing it. I'm mounting this show that's unbelievable with video and soundtrack.
When is this going to happen?
Well, that's the thing. I either got to get somebody to break my heart so I can finish it.
Or, for more material?
Yeah. But also this is the thing. What I find myself doing is I'm looking to be in that stage of need. And I find that I'm attracted to, things that will put me in that state of need, because it seems to be the only way that I can create something is if I want something or somebody that doesn't want me.
Do you
want
to stop the cycle?
No, that's my point.
So you are attracted to people fucking you over. Is that what you're telling me?
It gets me going.
So you're not really sad that things don't work out.
I'm happy.
So this is all just a... Come on.
I'm not kidding.
Do you think every great thing came from you, your heartbreak, or somehow you hitting
yearning,
rock bottom?
Yearning, not even heartbreak, yearning, desire.
But wait, desire.
Not sexual desire, just desire. That's what gets me, to be in that state of desire.
So you really don't need someone. You really deep down
I do. I need a guy who made me feel the desire.
To make you feel the desire so you could use him for when he dumps you. How could he really dump you if you want him to dump you?
Because I pick someone who will never get there in the first place.
I think deep down you're full of shit. I think deep down there's something that you really do want, something meaningful and long.
No, I don't.
Because you have been hurt. You have been hurt. But also you have had great sex. You've had a great life. You've had all these great things. So maybe you just want to focus on your career. I don't know. You tell me.
Well, that was awfully demanding, Michael. God,
you said you liked it.
You're being in charge of me.
I'm being in charge.
You're being in charge. Ooh. Yes, I want. Yes, I want to keep doing what I'm doing with my eyes on the prize of full expression of what it's meant to be alive on my path. It's good stuff. That I must share, that I want to share.
Where are you your happiest, honestly? When do you feel I'm happy at this moment?
When I'm in that state of desire.
Does work give you that, the feeling? Acting?
Working on my show does,
working
yes.
on your show, but like working in Insatiable, that didn't give you any kind of...
The first episode it did, because I thought I was onto something, but then it kind of mutated into something else.
Well, then you come crazy and kidnap people and kidnap the guy. And
I didn't mind that. I just felt that I had lost my kinship with the writer or the showrunner. I felt like I had lost her.
Like she didn't want to talk to you anymore?
Like she wasn't interested in me, yeah.
She was like, yeah, yeah.
Got it. Do that. I felt like that, but that happens.
Sure. You're passionate that about happened. Something and then all of a sudden you kind
But it's also, you know, it can happen for a million. You've been on series before. It can happen for a million reasons. And and by the way, that's not in any way a put down at all. Right. Not in any way. I just, it didn't get picked up. So.
Insatiable didn't get picked up?
No. I know of.
I thought it did two seasons,
but I haven't heard about the third one. I should say it hasn't been picked up yet.
My friend Sarah Colonna works on that. You don't know her. You never worked with her, but
she said you're great. I love her.
She thinks you're great.
I think she's great.
I texted her. I said, do you have any goods on my girl Bev here?
What'd she say?
She said she's fantastic. She's, you want me to read
it? Tell her I said hi. Let's call her. Let's call her. I love her.
Sarah, what are you going to say?
I'm going to say, hey, let's
she'll
call
be, it'll be odd. She did a few eps. She plays a pageant coach, but the show is dark and she's crazy in it. She kidnaps the main character, blah, blah, blah. And she's super fun in it. No, super fun in it.
Well, just tell her you're sitting with me and I love her in it. And I'd love to meet her sometime. For real. I met her once in the makeup trail.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart. I mean, obviously, are you close with your kids? The kids, Anton.
Very close
and,
with my kids and extremely close with Al. We're a wonderful
family. And this
family.
Is a rare thing because there's a lot of time in your life when you and Al weren't close. And now you kind of like get along with his the
great.
Girl he's with.
Wonderful. He broke up with her. But yeah, it's all. No, we have a spectacular friendship. In fact, I take him more of my. I tell him everything.
Does he live in town?
Yeah, yeah. I tell him everything. I don't know if he tells me everything, but you know.
Does he call you?
Yeah, we talk all the time, yes.
But that's different than the last couple of years, right?
No. Not this has been going on for a few years.
But before that, it was no talk, right?
No, it was always talk, but you know, we kind of went from
kids
like
and
loving each other, becoming parents, hating each other, becoming friends, and then best friends.
And now you're back into best friends. Does he call you like little things like, you know, Bev, I don't know, this girl. Does he start talking to you about girls?
You know, I got to tell you something. You know, I've known Al 24 years, and if you've noticed, I'm maybe the only person who's never discussed my relationship with him, and I won't now. It's really private.
Really?
I've told you a lot.
You have?
Now.
But I like that you're, my point is, I like that you're, you guys get along
me
so
too.
Well.
Me too. Everybody
it's just a
does.
Rarity.
I don't think it's a rarity, but it's also me. I've got that wiring. I am designed to have long-term relationships. I always view, even intimate relationships, I always view them as like they're two tracks. There's like, you can have a profound friendship because of the intimacy that you've incurred and wanting to share these feelings and or you can have, and there's the sexual track. But my feeling is that if the sexual track interferes with that profound friendship, it's kind of a waste of time.
Who are the professional friends in life that you've worked with that you've remained close friends?
Name one. Chevy.
Everybody?
Chevy.
Is Chevy probably your closest in terms of
longest?
Well, I like that. I think that you're a likable person. You've always been likable. And you know,
I like to be likable.
Well, you are. You're likable.
Like to harmonious atmosphere.
Hey, you always talk about, you remember Carrie used to have all these big parties at her house, these gatherings, even if it was 10 of us or whatever. It was just fun. It felt like any, you know, it's like cheers. Right. Everybody.
Just stopped entertaining
people.
Well,
that's what I was saying.
Bed, yeah.
Because you would have some of these things and you started to get it going. And I think that you should do it more often. Not that you have to do it all the time.
I know.
But we need to get some of the game
back
together.
I did. Al and I did all the holiday parties together. That was good.
But it was just you guys, right? It was you and the kids and him.
Well, it expanded. I know. Don't get mad at me. Don't.
What? You didn't invite me?
I think I did.
You did say you didn't.
Did invite you.
You did. I couldn't make it because I was having my own thing. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You're having your own thing.
But the next time I talk to you, I want to be talking about you about to go do your one woman show.
Well, you gotta help me.
But I don't want you to, you don't need to rush. You're not, it doesn't have to be done tomorrow.
But I'm so afraid I'll run out of juice. You
no,
know,
you're not going to run out of juice. It's all there. It's in your head. I've heard your head. I've heard the noise.
It would go a lot faster.
You need a director.
You know what? Well, I've had two directors, but actually what I'm doing now is, you know, I was a member of the Actors Studio in New York and now I'm doing classes here.
You're taking acting classes.
I'm in the acting class. I'm, you know, watching. I haven't put a scene up, but I'm also going to take the director's classes.
Really?
Yeah.
What made you want to do that?
Well, it was Al's idea that I find a place to just stay engaged while my musical guy is gone, and also because he knows what I'm going through. Of like, I don't know what I need. Do I need to get my heart broken by this guy? Do I need to work out for 2 hours until my muscles hurt? I mean, like, what do I need to do to access the muse? I need the muse every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do things to access the muse, but my strongest one is find that unavailable person and yearn. And an energy comes out of it. I'm not kidding. I know I'm fucked up, but this is life. And I will tell you one thing, that originally, you know, songs that were written in the church, and they were written as aspirations to God, and romantic songs or lays came about when there was a shift. And the singers stop singing about, I love you, God, and I, you know, come to me, show me your light, and started singing that to a woman. I love you, bring me you, you know. That's the shift that happened.
I'm learning a lot from
in the 1400s.
Right, are you learning?
And so I even think at times, like, okay, these desires, these yearnings, maybe it's just I want the higher thing. Maybe I just want to connect to the universe. If I could just get a direct shot from the universe into my creative spirit, I would be happy. But I seem to always have to go through a man.
Do you think? Do you see a therapist?
No.
You don't go to therapy at all?
Not now, no.
Do you think you need therapy?
No.
Why is that?
I did altered state therapy. That's the kind of therapy I like.
Altered state?
Yeah.
And with, is that with drugs at all?
Ketamine.
Ketamine.
Mm-hmm.
I did ketamine for pain. It didn't help me.
It doesn't work for pain.
It didn't. Well, they said it would.
Works for PTSD.
So you had a lot of PTSD.
I didn't have a lot of PTSD. I had four specific things I was going after. And I worked with the
You knew exactly what they were.
I spoke with him a few times to kind of nail down. And I went after it. I mean, the way that I did it was not in a clinic. It was privately, and it was immensely helpful. And when I say to you, you know, I need to have a man. I'm not saying that to you as a self-deprecating thing. I'm saying that as a woman who understands her machinery. I'm saying that as a woman who understands her creative machinery. I became an actress because Milos Forman said, Angelichku, you have to decide if you will be a good girlfriend or a good actress. And I thought, what does he need more? He needs someone to star in his movie. I can do that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be a singer, and I was singing jazz and kind of writing these plaintive little songs in Canada. And Ronnie Hawkins, his band had just left him and gone on the road with Dylan as the Hawks or whatever. And he said, you know, stick with me and I'll have you parting through silk. So I learned all these rockabilly tunes. It's always been in service of some man. And I always get out of it carrying the pearls. But it just, that's my machinery and I'm kind of into it. Although I have of late thought, is it really, am I just trying to get to that universal consciousness where all of our hopes and desires and creativity lies to make some art.
But here's what I think. I know
I sound like I'm full of shit.
No, I think some people will think you're probably a little crazy and some people will think you're genius.
What's so crazy about what I just said?
And genius, there's a thin line. I think what you're saying makes perfect sense to me. Some people will think, oh, whatever.
But why do I want to deal with those people?
Exactly. That's my point. But what?
That was mine.
What I'm thinking is this. I know where my mind goes in millions of places, and I could feel like I'm all over the place, which you probably feel in a lot of ways, too.
Well, you're open.
Right. But then I sort of feel like, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm this, and I'm thinking of this, and I'm thinking of this. And how do I calm my mind down?
Well, there is that one thing. I think it was Einstein.
But that's why I go to therapy, just because I like to channel all this shit for an hour and a half and then go, I feel good. It's off my chest.
I do it in a different way. I write songs. I work on my show.
You use it.
I use
it. It's your advantage.
Yeah, I use it.
See?
And I mean, it's getting frustrating because all the work that I've been doing since last May, I don't have something to show for it. So it does sound crazy when I say I'm using it. It sounds crazy. If I was just in a normal life and I wasn't, and I didn't have any creative outlets, I go, yeah, maybe I should do therapy, but that's not where I'm at.
But I think, you know,
I'm not at that. I'm not into that.
By the way, if you say you're crazy because in a year or whatever, you haven't figured out a one woman show that's the genius that you've been thinking for for how many ever years, it takes time.
You know what Rufus said? He said, I should just book the gig and then I'll have to do it.
You know what somebody else just told me?
What?
They said,
don't book the gig.
People always wait. Here's what he said. This is actually, you know who this was? This is Billy Boyd from Lord of the Rings. He was on the last podcast or podcast a few weeks ago. And he says, this made a lot of sense. People are always, you know, the accent. And he's like, I won't do the accent. But he said, people are always wanting to perfect something, to rehearse it so much.
Right,
Before, because they don't want people to think or show it to them when it's finished. And he goes, that's just part of it.
But
go out there.
But here's the thing. That is my second phase. My second phase is in April when Kurt comes back from the road with Dweezil, and we are going to put it on its feet.
There you go. Last question.
Yeah.
Did you ever ask Al? I know. Fuck.
About the poster?
No, nothing sexual, nothing.
I said poster.
Oh, yeah. You're going to get him. Yeah, no, he'll do that. You said he'd do that. No, I'm going to ask you about this. Did you ever ask him to run lines, or did he ever ask you to run lines? I just think that'd be funny watching you guys run lines together.
I'm not going to indulge in this kind of psychophantic fan-based line of questioning. It's really demeaning, and you shouldn't do that.
It's demeaning.
It's demeaning yourself. When someone posits a fan-like thing, that means they put someone above them.
And I don't.
If you put someone above you, you're putting someone
if
below.
If I was seeing Nicole Kidman and someone goes, did she ever run lines with you? I go, yeah, she did.
I'd say none of your business.
Fuck you, Beverly D'Angelo. Will you go out to dinner with me again soon?
Yeah.
Bev, this is called Shit Talking with Rosenbaum. Quick
Ready?
Questions. Answer quickly. Benjamin J. The Sentinel is one of the nuttiest horror movies ever made with lots of great actors making brief appearances. Do you have any stories from working on this movie and being directed by Michael Winner?
I have a great story, and here's what it is. That'd I'll make good. It brief.
Let's do it.
I'm in New York. I came to New York from Canada with a Broadway show. It opened, it closed. Lots of casting directors dug me. It was a musical version of Hamlet. I get called in to meet with Michael Winner, who was doing his next film after Death Wish. I go into the meeting. He says to me, he talks to me for a few minutes, and he says, I want you to take this script home and read the role of Sandra because I'm offering it to you. I'd never been in the movies. I wasn't in Screen Actors Guild. I go home. I read it. I call up the casting director and say, I need to come back down and meet Michael Winner. She said, that's very unusual. You need your agent to arrange that. And I said, no. I don't have an agent, but I need to talk to him. He offered me the role. She goes, what? She comes back on the phone 2 minutes later and says, Michael, we'll see you. I go down there and I said, okay, Michael, look, I'm a singer. I'm not an actress. But if I wanted to be an actress, do you think I really want to do this movie? And he goes, my dear, I've done Death Wish. I've worked with Marlon Brando. Of course you want to do this movie. It's starring Ava Gardner, Burgess Meredith, all the greats. And I said, but look, on page 60, I'm eating the brains out of a guy's head. And I'm a zombie or something. He said, but my dear, you'll be eating the brains out of Chris Sarandon's head. And he's just been nominated for an Oscar for Dog Day Afternoon. And I said, well, okay, but look at this. Page 60 or, you know, whatever page it was. I've got a masturbation scene and I'm part of a lesbian couple. And he got a mute part of a lesbian couple. And he goes, but my dear, your lesbian lover will be played by Sylvia Miles, and she's been nominated twice. So I thought, okay.
So you did it.
Yeah.
All right. Andrew C., any great memories working on Annie Hall back in 77?
Again, same thing. Broadway show closed. I had done The Sentinel at this point. I still didn't have a Screen Actors Guild card. Casting director called me in to meet Woody Allen. I had just happened to have a dream about him the night before. I took in my diary. I said, look, I just dreamt that you were in my backyard in the snow playing the tuba. And he said, I'm working on a film. Can you come and be in it tomorrow? I said, yeah. And that's how I ended up in Annie Hall.
Raj, any interesting stories from working on The Simpsons?
Oh, well, Dave Merkins, speaking of long time friends, Dave Merkins, one of my true friends to this day. And it was always fabulous. And I wrote Finally Bagged Me a Homer for that show and have the publishing. And it's made me very, very happy.
Janelle S., Christmas Vacation, very special place in so many hearts. What are your favorite memories or just a memory from the set that you remember that you're like, I remember that? Or just in general?
I remembered that they were so rushed when we were getting this group shot that I said to Chevy, I'm going to put my hand on your crotch and I bet the director won't catch it. And it was true. And there's a shot in there because we only had one take.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. Well, it was like, he goes, freeze.
And that's the one they used.
It is because it was the only one. We had to get it. And I said, that director's never going to notice what I'm doing because he never did.
Lisa, which version of the Griswold kids do you feel most embodied the spirit of the Griswolds?
I'm very partial to the first Vacation because it was so innocent and so pure, but they're all so cool. I just did a screening at the Academy of Christmas Vacation with Juliette Lewis and Johnny Galecki, and they're just, you know, cooking on all four burners. They're all great.
Brittany G., how did it feel getting called into Vacation movie in 2015? Did it bring back memories starring with Chevy again?
Well, Chevy and I had just finished doing, we were just on our way to doing a pilot together. So it was just a reunion of sorts.
Nico P., if you could go back and only choose acting or music as a career path, which would you choose and why?
I had an album, four album deal, and I didn't do it. I would have, if I could go back, I would have said, Beverly, just keep pushing, stay true to yourself. Don't don't give up just because they all want disco.
Karen B., Beverly, what was it like growing up with just brothers, being the only girl?
Well, I think it affected me in the way that I relate to men as brothers, and that's not sexy. And that's what Michael and I have been talking about. Because if you had to boil me down, wouldn't you say I'm a sister type?
Sister?
No, don't I impress you as a sister? I'm not mysterious. I'm friendly. No, I'm like a sister.
I've known you for so long, but if I was a dude that was like, you know, didn't know you, I'd be like, she's kind of sexy. She's funny. She's ridiculous.
I'm not athletic. Like, I think.
What, you got to throw a ball to be sexy? What the fuck?
No, to be a true sister. Anyway, I don't know. But here's what I do know. My best girlfriends, except for two of them, are dead.
Mm.
So my world is populated by all men, and it's very comfortable. I love men. I love to be around men. I love the way they think. I love the way they can compartmentalize. They inspire me. I live for them.
Just don't attack them.
Just I know.
Last, Angie, can you share one thing you miss the most about the late, great Carrie Fisher? And side note, also, I have to say that after your Don Henley story, the last episode, I decided you are my spirit animal. So one story that we don't know about Carrie that you just remember, that you just, a small moment.
Oh, God, it's 34 years of small moments.
I know, there's so many moments.
Oh, you've caught me off balance.
Moment that was just you and her.
A million of them.
I know. Just lying in her bed.
A million of them.
Watching old movies.
A million of them. I can't. I'll tell you a moment. My son was dying, and he was triaged into Columbia Presbyterian, New York. Al was in Alaska. My son was 8 weeks old, and Al was on a film. And I didn't know what to do, and I called Carrie. And it was about 1 p.m, and Carrie was there by midnight with a pillow and a blanket, and she stayed with me until my son was okay 3 days later. There's a moment for you.
Wow.
And she just went, come on, let's go shopping in the gift shop. No, I don't want to. Put the baby down, Bev. Come on. You know, but that's a sad. Oh, I went to the sad.
No, that's good. That's a good
moment.
It shows you what a good friendship. Because you always hear these funny stories, but that's a moment.
I will tell you this, that weekend that we met, the Don
Henley story.
Yeah. The Murrieta Hot Springs, we drove home together. I'd taken a limo down there. We drove home together, and we stopped at a place and got our hair crimped in the same hairstyle. They were like these crimping islands, and we had like really weird hair. That was fun.
How old were you?
Oh, when I met Carrie, 27, 28.
Wow. All right. I love this. This is great.
Okay.
I love you.
I love you.
I love listening to that lady. She's out there, isn't she? She's wonderful and brilliant and all that stuff. Beverly D'Angelo, thank you again for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Always tweet us and Instagram us, or hello@insideofyoupodcast.com. And you could, you know, ask me questions, write in letters. I love the letters that you send, and we'll read one. But first, let's give a shout out to the top tiers of Patreon. All right, here we go. Nancy D, Mary B, Leah S, Trisha F, Sarah V, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Lauren G, Nico P, Barry I. A big shout out to Nico P for helping me with my neck. Got some Botox injections in the back of my neck. They said it's good for you, or it could help you, and we'll see what happens. Barry I, Angelina G, Jerry W, Kevin R, Emily K, Bob B, Robert B, Bordex, Jason W, Tiana D, Andrew C, Allison L, Mark A, Jason D, Chris Raj C, Raj, hi Raj, you have a lot of toys. Sean W, Joshua D, Emily S, hi Emily, CJP, Rox Raccoon, Samantha M, Hamza B, Stacy B, Carly T, Vanessa in the Sky, Reem, Jennifer S, Janelle B, Neil W, Tabitha 272, Kimberly E, Melissa R, Mike E, Jake M, Catherine M, Jack S, Carly S, Judith D, Ramira. Love that name if I said it right. Tell me if I didn't on Patreon, I'll respond. Chris F, Sarah V, Sean W, Stacy B, Tabitha 272, Tiana D, Trisha F, Vanessa in the Sky, Yukiko. If you heard your name twice, I think Bryce put your name twice on there, and maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but I might have screwed it up. It's easy for me to do that these days when I'm doing everything here in the studio. You know, I just hope this is in focus. I hope the sound's working. Let's read a letter. Okay. This is from Kate. I've been listening to the podcast and I wish I had found it sooner. As much as my nerd heart enjoys it for the content and great guests, the heart is what keeps bringing me back. It helps to know that there are other broken children out there that are still trying to figure shit out well into adulthood. Amen, Kate. My mother is dying, and when I went to see her a few months ago for the first time in years, I left knowing it would be the last time I saw her. I also know that I left without real closure or resolution, and that she would die unchanged and without any remorse for what she did to her children. I'm never going to get what I needed from her. It is what it is. I feel like this is a theme in the podcast, and I appreciate the frankness of it. I'm still working through how I feel about her, and I never really feel the need to talk about it, but listening to the show on my drive home is therapeutic. Knowing there are kindred spirits out there lightens the burden and allows me to give myself some grace and extend it to those around me. I hope it does the same for you. Keep pushing out episodes, and I will keep listening. Kate. Kate, you sent this, I'm not exactly sure when you sent this, but it was months ago, and sometimes I don't get around to them. But first of all, I'm sorry about your mom. And I'm sorry you didn't get closure. But, you know, I think an important part of all this is knowing the truth. And only you can know the truth. How you feel about her is how you feel about her. And, you know, sometimes you can't make excuses for people. You can't say, oh, well, this and this. Forgiving is important. Knowing the truth is important. I'm not a therapist, but I've gone to enough therapy to kind of sort of understand it. So, Kate, thanks for your letter. It's brave, and I really appreciate you listening. I'm glad you get something out of this show. I really am. I really think that's, you know, it's good. That's all I can say. Oh, that was heavy. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. We got a lot of great episodes coming. I know sometimes you probably like, you know, it's hard because, you know, people are always looking for the biggest and best guest. And, you know, sometimes our guests are bigger stars than the ones that are, you know, I love all my guests and they're all fantastic. And whether you like them or not, I hope that you'll listen because you like to learn about human nature and humanity in general and what makes people tick. And you like to learn, and I think that's the most important thing. So thank you for listening. Please follow all our handles, Inside You Podcast or Inside You Pod on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. I'm on the Patreon if you want to pledge and see a bunch of behind the, what do you call it, behind the scenes, sort of. We do extra. I did a bonus with Harlan Williams, my good buddy, comedian. We did a video. I interviewed him for like a little 20-minute fun thing just for patrons, and I do an inside of me where I film myself and answer questions to patrons. I do, so it's a lot of fun. I love the continued support. There's different tiers and stuff. Check that out. I'm on the Cameo. Thanks for supporting Left on Laurel, the band. I've been writing some more songs. Maybe I'll share one with you one of these times. I'll see you on the YouTube Live or the Instagram Live. And I would just urge you to, it's hard, but just try to appreciate what you have in front of you, you know? I'm telling you that as I'm, you know, I'm working on that, but the more you say, I'm grateful for this and this, and you start thinking, it's amazing how the brain works. I've talked about that. So let's just try to be better people. You know, that's all we could do. Thank you again for everything, and we'll get through this together. Thank you for allowing me to be inside of each and every one of you, and much love to you. And shout out to my friend Ethan Havener, who loves the fan letters. I appreciate him telling me that.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone's senior writer, Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.